CliffCentral.com.
Look who's here. It's the great Peter Dirk Ace. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, too.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
It's very lucky to see you. It's always nice to see you. You make me smile.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, you do. You do. I don't know. I get some kind of a feeling like we're going to be all right when there's someone who's been in the business as long as you have, and you're still going strong, and you're commenting on things that matter, and it just feels to me like we've got somebody looking after things.
Yeah. Well, I've got somebody looking after me. I have a government writing me my material on a daily basis.
So easy, right? I said earlier, and at the risk of repeating myself, I think it's kind of important to me. Satire and irony and an expression around what humor is and how important humor is in a society like ours, where there are divisions and there are problems, and we've all got issues, you know. Everybody's got issues in this country. To me, that's so fundamental to being in a free society. And you epitomize that because you've been able to cover this stretch of time where we were held captive by an autocratic government that actively got involved in regulating what you were and were not allowed to say. I mean, it's bizarre to think about it now.
Mm, it is.
Because even though we look at the situation now and we think of President Zuma and we think of the Guptas and we think of state capture and we think, oh my God, things are terrible, at least they're not telling you what you can and can't say. They'll try sometimes, but they can't.
But you can still say, you can say it. I mean, yeah. Here we are. What are we doing?
We're live
on the air. There was never such a thing.
And they can't stop us?
No. They can try.
But, I mean, Peter, this is the most amazing thing to me, because when you've lived through the kinds of changes that you have as someone who's held up that mirror to society, you have a good deal of perspective. And you have an understanding of context, which very few people are able to internalize. Because we live from week to week, you know, the news, especially now, thanks to social media and everything else. The news stories change all the time, right?
Yeah, and minute to minute.
And people don't remember what happened 3 weeks. I mean, someone tweeted yesterday, and I suddenly thought, oh my God, that's true. We've forgotten that the Chief Justice's office was broken into a couple of months ago. We've just forgotten, because in the news whirlwind, there's always something new that comes along.
Yeah, yeah.
By next week, Helen Ziller and the DA won't be news anymore. And if you think about it, some of the stuff that the Guptas have got away with is already old news. Nobody cares anymore. Yeah.
I find this every night on stage.
Yeah.
With my material, that I suddenly realize that a very important issue is no longer an issue because it's tomorrow. And suddenly yesterday's issue doesn't exist anymore. So you've got to adapt constantly. But you know, humor and comedy are two different things for me.
I mean,
comedy is the joke. Comedy is the fabulous joke that you want to remember to tell somebody else. Humor is very seldom funny. Humor is a very personal thing. It's like a fingerprint. Everybody's sense of humor means how far will they confront their fear. And if you actually confront your fear, sometimes you react with a ha-ha, meaning you walk into a room, somebody's behind the door. You don't know they're there. They go, boo. You get a hell of a skrik, but then you see it's your friend, and you go, ha ha, it's not funny. It's that knowledge that I know who you are, and you're not going to frighten me. In other words, confront your fear with humor, laugh at your fear, and make it less fearful. It's still lethal. It'll still kill you, but at least you've got your eye on the bastard. It'll never be taller than you. But the moment you look away, it'll become 200 meters high. And you will never confront it. And that's where fear is winning on every day in every country constantly, because people say, don't tell me, I don't want to know. Listen, it's too depressing. Darling, I don't want to know about the news. Oh, are we going to talk about that? Yeah, we've got to talk about everything. But if we can do it with that sense of humor, Nelson Mandela will be remembered one day when people stop all the fluff around this great whatever we talk about. We forget about the human and the extraordinary sense of humor that he used to change the world. I mean, one thing after another. First of all, coming out of 27 years in jail for forming a government with the people who locked him up. I mean, that in itself. Hello?
It's humorous.
That's extraordinary. Wearing the number 6 rugby jersey, bringing in a huge percentage of the population that didn't want to know anything about him. Having the wives of the prime ministers who locked him up to tea when he was president. I mean, that's still the image that I cannot stop thinking about. Is Nelson, would you like a cup of tea? Or a cook sister? You know, and handing it out. And then flying off to Mrs. Verwoerd
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I mean, all these things.
Thing
I mean, just one thing after another. First of all, falling in love with Evita Bassanian. Oh, Petra, please bring a vetter. I need a vetter. And I'll never forget, I mean, like the 20th time in 2 years that I was standing next to Nelson Mandela in this dress with his hair, and there was Evita holding his hand like Nancy Reagan. I said to him, President Mandela, you know, every time you look at me, I'm dressed as Evita. I said, don't worry, Petra, I know you're inside.
Wow, what a thing to say.
You know, he knew how to diffuse the tension. Do you remember that time? It was some months, some years ago. They found on a policeman's screensaver in Pretoria, a gorilla's face becomes Mandela's face. That was about like 8 years ago, seven years ago.
He was still alive at the time.
He was. I mean, and then there was a everybody screamed. I mean, this is before Penny Sparrow. Everybody, my God, you got a lot of them. And so journalists went to Houghton and knocked on the door. President Mandela, did you hear what happened in Pretoria? Oh, no, what happened in Pretoria? On a policeman's computer, they found a gorilla's face that becomes your face. He said, of course, every gorilla wants my face. That was it.
Instead of Helen Zille
and the DA, what are you talking about, darling? And she's saying, I had too many glasses of Chardonnay. I shouldn't tweet after I've done that. Enough of that stupid story. What the hell are we doing? Dismantling the alphabet of democracy here. You know, it's just, and it's not free speech because she's accused of free speech. So we've got a problem here. She's got the right to an opinion. I mean, I don't think anybody with an IQ of an artichoke will use the internet and 140 characters to put in across a point of view. But then President Trump has changed that, you know. Common sense once needed 140 pages. Now it only needs 140 characters.
And he got to be president of the United States by tweeting some of the most stupid stuff humanity's ever had in its catalog.
Well, I'm sorry, they deserve him. I think every country deserves the government they get.
Well, what does that say about us?
We chose them.
So what does it say about us at the moment?
Well, there we are. We're sitting with a cock, aren't we? I mean, I may keep on saying the sandbox is full because the fat cats have had sex and world diarrhea.
Yo.
Somebody's got to clean that sandbox. That is the biggest problem. Not what we have today, but what we will have when it's over. And it will be over. You know, that's a great thing. I mean, look at history.
Look how excited you got when you said it will be over.
It will be, of course it will be over.
Because we just see a lot of people. I'm not a miserable person, so I look at things and I imagine that tomorrow is always going to be better than yesterday. That's just the way I'm built.
Yes, good.
But when you say it like that, for some people it's hard to imagine that we'll ever get out of the economic decline and lack of growth and unemployment and all the stuff Justice was talking about earlier.
But it's basically terrible leadership.
Yeah.
Terrible leadership leads to all those things you've just mentioned.
But I interrupted you. So
no.
When we get out of it.
Look at history. Nazi Germany, we got out of that.
Yeah.
Soviet Russia, we got out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Apartheid, we got out of that.
Right.
We are going to get out of this Zoomification of our land. And the one thing we must always remember is that, and thanks to our free media and extraordinary reality of news breaking in the palm of your hand, we know who they are. We know what they did. We know how to spell their names and pronounce their names. We know how to draw cartoons of their faces. We know how to put showers on their heads. Their day will be over, but we will remember them. They will have to hide. They will not be served in restaurants.
Yeah.
They will have to move out of their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They will have to put on long dresses and high-heeled shoes and to be Muslim wives so nobody sees their faces. In other words, we will just remember these bastards and we will get them by ignoring them.
Because we did this with the old regime.
Yeah.
I mean, there were places, Magnus Malan and Adrian Flock and these people, they were basically excluded from society. They grew old and they died and nobody cared.
And we must keep caring, please. Let's not say we don't care. I mean, I will still always
nobody
remember.
Nobody cared about them, let's be particular.
Well, their echo, I mean, Thabo Mbeki, who is rewriting his legacy brilliantly in blogs, thanks to him and his carelessness, 380,000 people died in this country, and they did not have to die. And that's something that I will not allow myself to forget. And I just want to remind everybody, you know, don't forget. Like we do forget things after 24 hours. I am very excited about our democracy. I think considering where we come from, considering what we did to each other in the name of God and in the name of democracy, quote unquote, the italics are mine.
Yeah.
You know, we have an extremely active judiciary that is independent and cheekily independent, which I just love.
Which we thought it wouldn't be.
We didn't. We thought, We have got the free speech. We've got excellent journalists.
Yeah.
We've got terrible journalists, but they're also allowed to show us how badly things can go. We've got fake news, but we've got some unbelievably passionate realities that we can discuss and argue.
And my point that we have humor.
And
people are always saying, well, what is it that binds South Africans together? Well, we kind of laugh at the same things.
We are an extraordinary society. Why are we here? We two white people. We three white people. We two and a half white people. We are here because the majority
co-opted into the whites much.
You know, we are here because the majority, the huge majority of our population in this country in 1994 said, hey, I like your hair. Hey, I like your shoes. Oh, I like your car. Hey, come, let's go. They didn't say, stand against the wall, I'm going to shoot you, you racist bastard. They could have done that. I take full responsibility for everything that went wrong during apartheid. Because I'm white, so-called Christian, so-called educated, and all those things. But Nelson Mandela just led that troop. Oh, no, come, let's go. You know, blah, blah, blah.
Let's get along.
And de Klerk had the key. Let's never forget that one man who did not have to open that door, opened that door. He had the key. Nobody else had the key.
Yeah, it could have got ugly.
Listen, it could have still been there today. They were powerful enough. They had enough guns, enough weapons to keep this country controlled till now.
And they would have killed people. They did it before.
And so I'm all for the, you know, yes, absolutely. Be angry, be insulted. All the things, you got your hashtag, you can get the attention. But really, to take a sort of a inebriated old white lady who called somebody a monkey and make her pay 100,000 rand, which is nonsense. I mean, nonsense, people. The Helen Ziller thing, it's a waste of time. It's a diversion tactic that's doing us a lot of damage. And Helen is, she's brainy enough to actually have said, okay, you know, boom, boom, I'm sorry, and I'll get out of the way, and there are some other people who can do the job as well as I can. You know, we've got to just balance things a little bit more.
When you say that, you know, there are some things that you won't allow yourself to forget, what do you say to the people who counter that with, but we need to forget to move on, to progress? Because you're saying never forget.
Well, I believe never forget, because by never forgetting, you actually can encourage yourself to believe in a future. But if you go into a future without the past will repeat itself. And you suddenly say, what's this? What do you mean, what's this? This happened. Yeah. History repeats itself and takes tragedy and turns us into farce. Isn't that what this great saying goes?
Yes.
And another one that Lenny Bruce said about satire. Satire is tragedy plus time equals satire. We don't have time. And during the apartheid years, I didn't even have a day. What happened in the morning, I had to try and weave into the material of the evening, which was hard because nobody knew what I was talking about. Because there was no news.
Yeah. This is a big thing that people don't realize about the past in this country, is that prior to 1994, we had a tiny sliver of a free press, but it wasn't anything like the information that you can get on the internet now, the stuff that you get on TV.
People were scared of it because they said, are we allowed to read it? Are we allowed to be here?
People would say
in the audience with my shows, are we allowed to come here? Are we allowed to watch you? And even now, people say, I don't know if I'm allowed to come. You know, what are you talking about? I mean, I have it in my perron, Evita Se Perron in Darling. I have a little museum, a nauseam, images of the past. That's also one of the things about not forgetting. I've collected them through the years. Really not collecting them, but a picture of Dr. Verwoerd in a fantastic big wooden frame. I thought, I want the frame. Fuck it, print. I'll throw the picture out of Verwoerd, you know. And Blutrevier and Futrika Monument and all this Harry Potter stuff that taught us history, you see.
Harry Potter.
And I put it in, it's in my museum, it's on the walls, and it's extraordinary because, and I don't have an agenda, I don't say what they did. I don't say Hendrik Verwoerd was. There it is. If you don't know who it is, doesn't matter. If you want to know, you can find out. And then I've had this one extraordinary thing. My dressing room is next door, so I can hear through the little window thing. There's the grandparents, the parents and the children are going through looking at the pictures. Now here are the grandparents. Oh, papa, kijk, oh, dat is Hendrik Verwoerd. Is oom Hendrik. Oh, nee. En is dokter. And they are so emotional about their past, their forgotten past, their fraught past. Now their children, the parents, are behind them and they say, ach, nee, man, ma, just move on. Oh, God, oh, gosh, I can't stand the look of those people. And oh, blah, blah, blah. Here come the grandchildren, tiny ones. And the little granddaughter, who's about seven,
says, who's
says
that?
To Granny, Oma, wat beteken whites only? Now, this 78-year-old, very decent Christian Afrikaans lady, who has never, ever thought of having to explain what that means because she took it for granted, has to explain. That's it. That's what it's about for me. People must ask questions. Children must ask questions. Parents must find answers. Many people are going to say, I don't know. I lived through the apartheid era, but I don't know. Let them be uncomfortable about the question. And let all the young generation of born frees, who are now becoming 20-year-old, 25-year-old angry people who want to rule the country, let them ask questions of their parents, not just about apartheid, but about them, their parents. The one thing I regret about my life is that I never asked my father enough questions about his life. I know more about Sophia Loren's family than I know about my own family. Yeah. Why were we so scared of asking questions? And why were people so scared of answering questions? So that's, I encourage the kids at school also, you know, always ask a question. When you get an answer, get a second opinion.
that's the best advice you can take. And isn't that also the mark? I always say that it's what really indicates to me that someone is intelligent is not how much they know, but how much they want to know.
It's the excitement of discovery.
Yeah, curiosity.
I'm so excited. I mean, I'm the original monkey. I mean, I pick up every bloody stone I can find. And I just love the way people are, actually today around us, people are questioning what we all took for granted in our lives, in our generations. The new, and of course, with this new technology, which is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, more information that the world has ever had and less knowledge than people have ever allowed themselves to have. Because you go into the internet and people, what are you doing? I'm surfing the internet. What are you looking for? No, I'm surfing. I said, listen, you never surfed a dictionary. You knew what you were looking for. No. So try and focus a little bit more on the issue. Listen, I'm the last one to talk. I go into YouTube to find something and I spend 4.5 hours enriched by the glory of seeing things that I'd never see. Politicians, Roosevelt making a speech. I mean, I expect Jesus to be hanging on the cross saying, has somebody got a glass of water for me? You know, I mean, that's how the internet is. So one has to be very much in charge of one's time.
Yeah. Mm. Do you feel sometimes that there's almost too much out there? And for someone like you who... You have a venue, you have a show, you have people who come and take time to come and watch these things, that maybe there are too many distractions that you have to compete with now that weren't around then, and people almost have lost the art of conversation and paying attention for a long period of time. I feel there's a genuine abundance of information, which is to our detriment, not always to our benefit.
Yeah.
The plus of it, obviously, is you can find out about anything. You could type in the most arcane thing about... I don't know, ancient Antarctic history, and you'll find something.
You will.
But it doesn't mean that you can sit down with someone and have a meaningful conversation without having to Google every second thing that they say.
Or even find somebody who knows what you're talking about. I mean, really, truly, just take the theater, with that I mean live theater, not theater, hospital theater that most other people are in. You know, to get somebody to come to me, first of all, there are so many things that they'd rather do. I'd much rather sit at home on a rainy, wet day and watch The Crown and watch something from Netflix and watch something. There are thousands of fantastic 100% materials and movies and books and things. Mm-hmm. And even sex is so inventive, you can spend a whole night trying new things out and you don't have to go out to the theater to find
That's
out.
That's true.
So what I've got to do is I've got to say to somebody, give me 4 hours of your time. I've got a show that I want you to see. I'm on a stage. I'm live. I'm not a recording. I'm not a little DVD. I'm actually L-I-V-E, live. Okay, what do you got to do in Johannesburg? You've got to set your burglar alarm. You've got to feed your Rottweiler, feed the dogs. You've got to load the gun. You've got to reverse your 4x4 out of the driver, hoping that the Nigerian burglars don't run in when you drive out. You've got to risk your life in the Joburg traffic, which means you become a racist in 20 seconds. You come to the theater. You park your car. You kiss your car goodbye. You go into the venue. You get your tickets. You sit in your seat. And what happens now? Are you... coming into a life-changing experience, because that's what it's got to be. You come to me and I want to give you something you will never forget for the rest of your life. Sadly, no. so many of these experiences are not a life-changing experience. They are a carbon copy of something that's happened somewhere else. It's a musical that you don't really have to see. It's stand-up comedy. They can give you the DVD, the CD. You can listen in your car. So I have got to be so original and so inventive and so there of the moment that you will come back. You see, I want you back. I don't want you just to come for one thing. But I'm not decrying the fact that there are alternatives that are just as exciting.
Yeah, but you've got to be, and I don't think you've ever let anyone down. I can't imagine, because to you it's important to be original and to make that life-changing experience
and
happen.
And every performance is your first and your last. I've been on stage alone for over 7,000 times.
That's...
And every single time I've got to give you 100%. I can't, even if there are 12...
Do you still get nervous?
Well, you know, the word is different. I get excited. Nervous means you can't do it. Excited means you can. You still want to go to the lavatory for 2 hours. You know what I mean? You want to throw up and
but
run.
But it means for you that you, it's almost, I'm not saying effortless as in you don't put in effort because you put in tremendous effort, but it's now internalized to the point where if anything happens, you can handle it.
I don't want to tempt the devil here.
No,
but Jacob Zuma sits in the front row with four wives. I will have to handle that for the first time. You know, I'm like a pilot. I mean, every flight is the most important flight because you can't make one mistake.
Yeah,
that's what I am. I'm flying an aeroplane with you, and you're my passenger. So I don't want to kill you. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want you to vomit. I want you to have a nice time. So it's important. So
you mentioned at the beginning that the government helps you write a script every time for your show, and you're always changing the content of your shows. But what else do you do to stimulate your creative abilities? Because you can also get into, like any of us can, I suppose, you get into a hole sometimes and you just go, I'm not really feeling particularly inspired. I'm sure it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So do you... watch a great TV series? Do you go to theater yourself? Do you watch these YouTube videos, or do you go for a walk? I mean, you live in the most beautiful part of the country.
In Darling, and it's raining. Oh, thank
goodness,
raining.
Right?
You know, people pray for rain in the Western Cape, and it rains in Gauteng. It's called service delivery. You know, all the things you've mentioned there, yes, you know, first of all, I work on three or four projects at the same time.
Yeah.
So when I dry up on the one, I go on to the other.
Mm.
And it's like having different courses around a dinner table. The government's material, the politics, is the toilet paper, which I have to use to wipe the things they do. But I really am inspired by the people, by listening to people, listening to the children, the kids. I have wonderful conversations with tiny, tiny little people who ask questions. We have an early childhood development center in Darling as part of my Darling Trust.
Yeah.
70 little hojas between the age of 3 and 5. 70 little people.
Yeah.
Who, and I watch them grow their confidence and they ask questions, and it is the beginning of their lives, and leadership is happening in front of my eyes, and I see their parents who never had that in their lives, the grandparents who still can't read thanks to what we did to them during all those years of apartheid. And yet there's no bitterness, there's just excitement and celebration, and it can be done. You know, one thing Evita said in her show that I've been doing for the last 3 weeks at the Monte Cassino, Evita Posadnet and the Cactus of Separate Development, which has been a wonderful sort of really, truly, for me, again, putting her sort of into the cesspool of acid. She's now a member of the ANC, of course, which is the place where they really deserve her. I mean, she's in the kitchen cooking for reconciliation. And she just said... to the audience, which major white audience I have at Monte Cassino, she said, you know, we white people, we have been given the greatest gift in the world. We are totally irrelevant. Nobody cares about us. Isn't that wonderful? We can do everything and anything to make this a better world. We don't need a tender. We don't need permission. We don't have to stand in line at a political office. We can get out and do it. If you're a retired teacher, get in your car on a Tuesday, drive to the local school and help the kids with their homework. That could change the future of our country. I want to say that, but I want to say that not as an Oprah Winfrey moment. I just want it to flow out of the mouth of somebody who doesn't exist, who is a fairy in the garden. And some people go out and they say, do you know, I never thought of that. I can do something. So do something. Don't wait for government to help you. They help themselves.
Does Evita get away with saying things that Peter Dirk Ace never could?
Oh, yes. I mean, the stupid things that she says, I would never say. She is an extraordinary clown because she's been with me since 1981 as a physical reality. In other words, she's been in everybody's lives, including yours.
Absolutely.
As well. People have watched where she's gone. Absolutely. And so she represents very many important diversions and speed wobbles in our society. She says this as well. She says, look, you know who I am. I was a member of the National Party, yes. I was ambassador to Babette Kosweti. And yes, I voted for apartheid. She said, I don't want to admit it, but I must admit it because I'm the only white person who will admit it. She said that if I hadn't voted for apartheid when I did, I would have been locked up as a terrorist and a communist, and I would have been the Minister of Education today. In other words, she says, yes, like an alcoholic, I will say, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But I won't drink. I am a racist, therefore I will not be a racist. You see, that word has become so toxic. I'm not talking about the action, I'm talking about the word, that people don't want to even discuss it. You have to discuss it. You have to analyze why is it so politically correct for politicians to use that word to shut up conversation and stop arguments and make people feel like second-class citizens because they're not quite sure what they've done wrong. I mean, get them right. If they've made a racist statement, and some of them are absolutely shocking, thanks to the social media, you hook into those people and you clap them very hard. And in other words, you actually change the way that they think.
Well, you try to. I mean, in many of these cases, there are a lot of people who just aren't going to change.
But they're not going to change.
And you, there's no point in trying to beat yourself up about the fact that you can't change them, right?
But you have to peel that onion.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's talking
to you
about
people cry.
Yes. And people suddenly also realize that old habits, old Afrikaner habits of using K-words and other words that we grew up with, you can't use them because you've got to understand what they mean now. And again, people don't quite know what they mean until you actually explain to them. And I tried to do this in some of my material, to have a woman who was one of them, an Afrikaans Tani, who's now got three black grandchildren, although she says they're not black, they're not white, they are Barack Obama beige. And they are actually inspiring her by saying, what are you going to do to protect democracy? That's why Evita's back in politics. She wants to stay at home and read a book, but she's now in Little House.
Does she, when you put her away for any period of time, do you miss her?
Do you know, I spend about 2% of my time on Evita Posadnet, and that's mainly to diet for her. I diet for a woman who doesn't exist,
but
there all the time.
Yeah, okay, so she's never really, you don't miss her and you don't get sick of her.
No. I mean, hell's bells. I mean, to have a character that in the last 30 years has become so real that people don't even think that I've got anything to do with her is pretty extraordinary.
No, that's
she is alive every week. I don't know if you watch her reality show on YouTube. I mean, every Sunday morning we do a four-minute reality bite of her take on the news.
I subscribe,
Evita's free speech. And we're now on episode 94, which is great. So every week...
Do you like the internet?
Look, it's not about like or not like. It's like measles. Do you like it or not like it?
Okay, so
I find it terribly exciting and frightening. I really find it frightening.
Why frightening?
Because it is so extraordinarily invasive. It can go everywhere, and it can do your job for you. You press a button, and boop, you get everything, and there it is. Instead of finding it and maybe reading it and working it out and cook it, you can't cook it. You can't cook it like a cake. The cake is there. You can just only eat it and get fat. You know what I'm saying?
That's one hell of a
word. So I have a great respect for it. And I'm very sorry that I'm not clever enough to actually use it to its extreme. I've got some 12-year-olds in Darling who say, "Nee man, geen money nie dat troe wat gaan jou en oh jy's so bloody stupid." You know, that's great. I love that.
This, by the way, this early childhood development stuff. I know we're diverging here from the conversation, but this is important because if you can help kids at that age, it fixes a lot of problems that you can never fix later on.
It is the most important step in the right direction. It's not fixing. It's giving the alphabet. It's giving the vision. It's actually creating a little human being in that tiny creature, not just a little child who's got to bathe. And I see them when they start in the year. They're quite small and sort of, you know, like children are, you know. And you can see them growing with confidence, and you can see the difference it's made when they leave the little school after a year and they go into the real school, grade 1, 2, 3. The difference between them and the other kids who have not had this experience of numbers and words and drawing and music and laughter and how to button a shirt. How's this for crazy?
Yeah.
They are taught how to button their shirts. Because their parents don't button shirts, they have T-shirts, because they buttoned their shirts wrong when they were small and somebody laughed at them. I said, what's he talking about? You button a shirt. No, you start at the top, and when you get to the bottom, every little thing has got its hole. Every button has got its hole. If you start in the middle, maybe there's a little tail that hangs down. I mean, have you ever thought of that? I've never thought of that. But it's a very important thing to show how to do it properly so that nobody laughs at you and makes you look silly. I mean, there are so many things. Kiddies who don't know that they can see pictures in their mind. When you say this story about a cat. What does a cat look like? Oh, no, I don't. There's no picture. I said, no. What about the picture in your head? Picture in my head? I said, yes. Am I allowed?
What?
Yes. Nobody told these kids they can see pictures. They can imagine things in their heads. I said, Hollywood lives in your head. You can make the best movie in your head, your imagination. So, I mean, I'm really...
You're very hands-on with this stuff.
I have to be, yeah. Because these are lives we're talking about.
What got you into that? I mean, darling, when did you move there?
21 years ago.
And you've become like the unofficial mayor of Darling.
Oh, no, please. No. I don't know the Guptas. Don't blame
me. I'm not saying politically, but everybody knows that's where you live. It's a small little town.
Yes, it is. Evita is actually the godmother. I mean, the longest road in Darling is the Evita Poseidonet Boulevard.
Oh, wow.
You'll find it on the GPS. And I love seeing Helen Ziller or Patricia Dillon saying, have you got a boulevard yet? No. It was when the moment I got involved with took over the little railway station that was derelict, the little building.
Turned it into your
Evita. Put a little stage in there, and I thought, what the hell? Let's see if we can do a show here. And when I suddenly saw that the kids in the community and the people in the community were, can we come? 1995, can we come? I said, of course you can come. How much is it? I said, I'll tell you what, we've got the Babeti Kosweti passport. If you can buy it for 10 Rand, and then Evita will sign, and then you can come in with your passport for free or pay what you can. You can give, always if you want to pay. I don't think things should be free. No. But so they bring me jar jams, and they're biltong in Lekkerhoek and so on. And then the kids came and said, what's going on here? What are you doing here? We go to make a little stage and a little theater. Oh, what's a theater? And we go to sing and all. You go to sing. Yeah. Oh, I'd like to sing. I said, can you sing? Yeah. Do you sing well? Yeah. Come sing. No. I said, no, come on, there's nobody. It's just me and you. Come sing. And this little 7-year-old barefoot clonky comes on to the little stage at 10 o'clock in the morning with me and a hammer in my hand. I'm building something. And he sings, and it's not so good. Because he's nervous.
Yeah.
Of course, we're nervous. So I said, come again. And he comes again. And and we have our first talent show. And there he comes. He does a Britney Spears number.
Yes.
Baby, one more time. We go mull. We make him sing it 4 times. This little person eventually came second in the world in the London Trinity College singing exam.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. There it is. It can be done. It can be done. A barefoot little creature. His dreams can come true. And that's what it's about. It's about what you want for your life. And everybody's got a dream. And these kids, they see television. They see they want to do this. I want to be Lady Gaga. I said, well, no, she's good. Why don't you be Lady Baba? Be original. Don't copy. You don't want to copy. You know, when people say, you know, is it easy? Is it easy? Oh, please, easy. It's terrible. I don't want things to be easy.
I'm absolutely astonished by that story about not being able to see the pictures in your head. Being robbed of your imagination. That's got to be one of the most ugly kinds of theft
it is,
imaginable.
Huh? It is.
No matter how horrible your life might have been, and no matter how nasty everything about the world can be, to have your imagination stolen away.
Or to not even know it's there. That's the thing. It's not that somebody took it. You can't take away an imagination. You can pollute it, of course, with fear.
That makes me
actually
so sad.
Not having it in the first place and discovering it. But then once discovering,
when you discover
oh, please,
it, sure.
That's just great. Wonderful. So our Darling Trust, and people can actually look on the internet. It's thedarlingtrust.org. And it's a tiny...
How do we support this?
Go into the internet and it tells you how, because you know every penny. I mean, sure. I had a thing on 2 days ago, a little interview on a television thing, and it took a long time to do it. It was only a small interview, but it took a few hours waiting for somebody who didn't have something along. And the producer was saying, I'm sorry, man, listen, what can I do? I said, you can give me a check for my trust. What he did, 15,000 Rand.
Wow.
He gave me a check for the Darling Trust.
Well, I said, how many hours of your time did they waste?
About 3.
Yeah, well, then that's fair. That's, that's fair compensation.
So, but it's not a huge, you know, again, one is up against so many preconceptions about helping. I use that word carefully. I'm very careful. Charity is a very dangerous word.
Yeah.
You know, let us help. Let us give charity. No, you expect people to be grateful. Why must people be grateful? You make it better for yourself as well.
Yeah.
And it's a tiny
you
trust.
You must never do that stuff.
And
with
people
an
say, you know, how many thousands of kids? I said, well, you know, there are 2,500 young people under the age of 16 in Darling, which is a hell of a lot of young people.
Yeah.
I said, but it's not about how many thousands. It's one life saved. One. And start with your own. If you can save your own life, people will look and see your life and say, how did they do it? I also want to do that. So it's a slow process, and yet it's a very universal thing. Anybody can actually be part of it. You don't have to have a degree or money. You just have to listen and understand where the excitement comes from.
Well, I think you had some kind of effect on me when I was a kid from that point of view. I don't think I've ever told you this before, but when I used to see you doing your impersonations and things, it made me want to be able to do that. I suppose that's maybe...
And you've been doing it ever since. Well, I mean, look at this impersonation you're doing now. It's fantastic, man.
It's maybe where I developed an appetite for doing that kind of thing, and I realized I could make people laugh with it.
There you are. Great, and, I'm happy
and
to hear that.
But if you discover that when you're young, it gives you a tool. It gives you a means of being able to figure out the world around you, make sense of it, let other people in.
Yes.
Help them make sense of it and laugh. To laugh. I mean, to be able to laugh, to be able to make other people laugh.
To laugh not always because it's funny, but because you actually are in charge of the issue. I mean, lots of the things that I do in my work is laughed at, not because it's funny. It's absurd. Mm. It's obscene. It's actually so shocking when you actually look at some of the ministers in our government, they will be nameless for the moment. I don't want to give them unnecessary publicity. And you just look at these footballs, you know, and I just so angry. And yet when you laugh at them, you actually diffuse them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the saying, which I can't use. I can never say this again because people say this is hate speech. You can't say, you know, Penny Sparrow, here I come. You know, but I've said this on stage so often that politicians are like monkeys. The higher they climb the pole of ambition, the more of their asses we can see. And that's the trouble. We look up into the heavens and it's all asses.
There's a great song on that. Who is it? He says, the higher that the monkey can climb, the more he shows his tail.
That's a nicer way to say it. Say that nicely.
Call no man happy till he dies. All the world's charity can fit into a pail. Something like that.
It's not Oprah Winfrey.
No, it's not. This Oprah is Winfrey. Not inspiring. This is pretty sad.
Well, you see, the big work will come next year, January. I mean, I'm very glad that the ANC's put a lid on this cookpot because you can't get rid of a president now. It's just too complicated.
Oh, you think so?
No, you can't. Listen, they kick out Jacob Zuma and he will go. Of course, because he said, I will always go. If the ANC says go, I'll go. But I will take my files with me. He was the head of intelligence. Come on, he's got secrets on everybody.
Everyone, right?
Okay. And so they put the lid on. At the end of the year, there are processes and democratic ways of actually sidelining this man and sending him to Dubai to the little flat. And then the work starts. Now, how do we clean up South Africa in order to actually get it to work again? I would like to suggest a government of national unity. You know, if the new president says, let's take a rain check on a party politics for a year, government of national unity, there are very, very, very good politicians in all the parties. We all see the bad ones, but there are some very good ones. Mm. Get them together, sort this thing out, and clean the sandbox because it's got to be used again. And then we can start again in 2019 with a general election, which is due anyway. If we just do cut and paste, we don't going to solve anything.
Yeah, and we're going to be left with the remnants of a rotten system.
No,
too.
Then we're going to be Colombia or Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be either of them.
Now, tell me about your day-to-day life. I mean, you're up here in Joburg now, so you're obviously staying here for a couple of weeks doing your show at Monte Cassino. But you go back to Darling, and then you spend a lot of your time writing, I assume. You're performing all the time? I mean, what's the schedule?
Well,
like?
I have 262 performances scheduled for this year.
That's worse than Steve Hoffmeyer and his tour, right? I mean, he always used to say he was the hardest working man in show business because he stole that from James
Brown.
Well,
Evita does half of them, so she's the hardest working politician in Lutuliers. But interestingly, I mean, you know, I love coming on tour, like, for example, Johannesburg, because I've been here 3 weeks with the Evita show. Now, this week, I do my own memoir, The Echo of a Noise. I'm doing full performances tonight, tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, which has been the
most... What do you do when you feel ill? What do you do when you're not feeling so good?
Well, you know, I have a deal. In my diary, because I have to keep diaries, meaning I have to just list everything, make lists of what I've got coming to you, and then I've got to go there. So it's out of my head. It's on a piece of paper. So my head is empty. The car park is empty for new cars to come in. Okay. I also decide when I'm going to be sick. You know, 2 weeks in October, and I do it in my diary, sick. And do you know what? I don't want to sound like Shirley MacLaine here. I get sick. And I have my medicine there, my chocolate there, my cat's been fed. I unplug the phone and I'm as sick as a dog. My nose runs and I look terrible. And I don't have to cancel things and I don't have to panic because I'm sick.
You actually you've got your own.
You've got to say to your body, listen, I respect you, but not now because I need you. Yeah. You know, please, car, don't have a flat wheel now. I have a flat wheel at the garage. So when I'm sick, it's very hard because you feel sick is terrible. And when you lose your voice, you've got no voice. So that's always a, but again, I found if I do an Evita show and I've got flu, she hasn't got flu.
Oh, yeah.
I know, dangerous territory this. And I go on stage and the voice is there. It's discipline, actually. It's discipline. I've got to be, you know, what do you do in the day? I get up very early. I'm a very, very early bird. And when I'm not working at night, I'm quite happy to go to bed at 8 o'clock. And I get up at 2.
Okay.
I get up at 2 in the morning.
That's healthy. That's sensible.
And it's fantastic. And in the summer, it's okay because the sun comes up at 5, 4:30. But then I can work. I could do a huge amount of work. I do a lot of internet work because I'm at the same time as America is more or less alive. And then by 8 o'clock in the morning, I've ticked my work list. And then I can talk to other people. I can sort of find out what's happening in the day.
Do you have a lot of close friends? Do you have people who you spend the little bit of free time that you have, is there a small sort of group of people who are old friends?
Yes.
People who you
a wonderful, wonderful group of people that I live for and are the most important people in my life. And I have my friends in Johannesburg. I have my friends in the world. I see them not every day, sadly. Yeah. We work too much. But when I need them, they're there. When they need me, I'm there. And we spend wonderful times together and very seldom talk politics. It's too boring. We talk about other things that are much more interesting.
Horrible.
But yes, I do writing. I love writing. I love, and I work in, again, being my own producer. I've been unemployed since 1975, so I've got to do it myself. So I'm working on 2019 when the election is coming. Do I have a show for that? And I'll be 74 then, going on 12.
And no signs at all of slowing down.
Why?
No, I
can't. You know, when you've got the health, it's all about health.
You don't have to persuade me.
It's all about health.
It's one of the things I admire about you is that you've just got no. And why should anyone retire?
It's a terrible word.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people who've stopped in. I mean, teachers are at their prime when they're 50, 55, 60, 65.
Yes.
They should even die in front of the class. I mean, that's a lesson.
So much to give. Absolutely.
That's a life lesson.
And this whole thing of, no, you must stop and you must leave. I think if you want to retire at the age of 25, you must be able to go. Get out of the way. You know, go. Don't be bad at your job because you hate it so much. I love what I do. And I encourage people, even the kids, when I do a lot of work with schools. It's no longer that terrible urgency about HIV like in 2002, which was terribly important.
You did a huge amount there as well.
You know, I go to the kids and we just have an hour together and I do some of the historical things and say, you've got to know where we come from so you can celebrate where we are going.
Uh-huh.
And I say, what are you frightened of? And of course, huge amount of things. But the most thing they're frightened of is, I'm never going to get a job. And I said, you know, you'll never get the job you want. You'll always start working for other people. So become your job now. How old are you now? I'm 12. What do you want to be? I want to be a trapeze artist. I saw it on the TV. I said, we'll start tomorrow. In 10 years, you'll be on the front page of Huisgenoot. In 20 years, you'll be on the front page of Time magazine. Meaning, you'll be the best in the world. Be the best. You will never have to audition. You don't have to have a color. You don't have to have a political background. You can be the person everybody wants. Look at Lady Gaga. When she started, people must have said, yeah, she's totally unique and totally fantastic. And don't be a copy of somebody else. You know, don't do another Evita Bisognet because you'll never be as good as Evita Bisognet because she's original. Be original. And I've now met so many young people who actually follow their dream and they are unique and extraordinary and like 16 and writing novels.
Jeez.
Yay. So, you know, it can be done. It can be done. It has to be done.
Do you listen to a lot of music?
I love music. My parents, I mean, my whole background was music. My parents were musicians, they were pianists. My mother came from Berlin with her piano. My father was a pianist.
I remember you told us that story last time you were here.
Pianist and...
Beautiful.
And Mozart was my pal. So I live by music. I have a soundtrack. When I walk in the street, I have a soundtrack, you know. When I need to write something serious, I find some Wagner. Not Wagner. When I want to write about Jacob Zuma, I write about Wagner at fast speed. Mahler.
Wagner was Hitler's favorite
composer. Mahler was indeed. Yeah. Wagner was indeed Hitler's favorite. But it's great music. Again, you know, the music speaks for itself. It's wonderful. So, and I love hip-hop. I love discovering the poetry of street slang.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in what the young people are doing, because everybody's young now, as far as I'm concerned. So it's a challenge.
Do you get a little despondent about how paltry the support is for the arts in South Africa?
I'm disappointed that we in the arts haven't made ourselves more exciting. You know, no, we haven't had enough tits and teeth on front pages. People say they forget about us because we're not a priority.
Yeah.
It starts again at the age of 3, age of 5, age of 12.
Yeah.
If you can take your child, first of all, read your child a story before they can read and get that imagination going.
Yeah.
Take them to a play, take them to a musical, take them to something. As you know, you go to something in the theater, you'll come back all the time because it changed your life. The media is not helping us at all. You can't find places to advertise your wares in the newspapers, which is a shame. They want your advertising. They charge you 35,000 rand for 2 weeks. You can't, please, hello, I'm sorry, but no. So you've got to find other ways, like here, like on the internet, yes, yeah. But not everybody has internet access. And you want to bring people into your world that have never been there before. So we are working very hard. It's a slow process, but let's hope that the excitement catches on, you know, and people say, I also want to go there.
Well, if the excitement hasn't caught on with what you do by now, then those people are never going to be brought in. Right?
Well, they can come and see me in the next few days. I'm still here.
Listen, it's always lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
It's always great to catch up. And please don't ever stop. I mean, you must die on stage. What a finale that would be.
And I will charge you to pay a ticket to see me die on stage. And
damn right.
And then a second show at 9 o'clock.
A premium.
Yes.
So tonight I might die on stage. I'm now 99 years old, and it could happen anytime. So don't miss the chance.
Okay.
Peter Dirk Ace, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The show is on at Monte Cassino. You can get your tickets, suppose online. Like
CompuTicket as well.
There we go, CompuTicket. And don't miss this opportunity to see such a great, amazing, terrific, talented South African doing his thing as no one else can do.
Thank you.
It's always good to see you.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.